of woven trees. Gilthoniel, O Elbereth, clear are thy eyes and bright thy breath. Snow white, we sing to thee in a far land beyond the sea. O stars that in the sunless year with shining hand by her were sown, in windy fields now bright and clear we see your silver blossom blown. O Elbereth, Gilthoniel, we still remember, we who dwell in this far land beneath the trees, thy starlight on the western seas.
The song ended. These are high elves. They spoke the name of Elbereth, said Frodo in amazement. Few of that fairest folk are ever seen in the Shire. Not many now remain in Middle-earth, east of the great sea. This is indeed a strange chance. The hobbit sat in shadow by the wayside. Before long the elves came down the lane toward the valley. They passed slowly, and the hobbits could see the starlight glimmering on their hair and in their eyes. They bore no lights, yet as they walked a shimmer, like the light of the moon above the rim of the hills before it rises, seemed to fall about their feet. They were now silent, and as the last elf passed, he turned and looked towards the hobbits and laughed.
"Hail, Frodo!" he cried. "You're abroad late, or are you perhaps lost?"
Then he called aloud to the others, and all the company stopped and gathered round.
"This is indeed wonderful," they said. "Three hobbits in a wood at night? We have not seen such a thing since Bilbo went away. What is the meaning of it?"
"The meaning of it, fair people," said Frodo, "is simply that we seem to be going the same way as you are. I like walking under the stars, but I would welcome your company."
"But we have no need of other company, and hobbits are so dull," they laughed. "And how do you know that we go the same way as you? For you do not know whither we are going."
"And how do you know my name?" asked Frodo in return.
"We know many things," they said. "We have seen you often before with Bilbo, though you may not have seen us."
"Who are you, and who is your lord?" asked Frodo.
"I am Gildor," answered their leader, the elf who had first hailed him. "Gildor and Glorian of the House of Finrod. We are exiles, and most of our kindred have long ago departed, and we too are now only tarrying here a while, ere we return over the great sea. But some of our kinsfolk dwell still in peace in Rivendell. Come now, Frodo, tell us what you are doing, for we see that there is some shadow of fear upon you."
"Oh, wise people," interrupted Pippin eagerly, "tell us about the Black Riders."
"Black Riders?" they said in low voices. "Why do you ask about Black Riders?"
"Because two Black Riders have overtaken us today, or one has done so twice," said Pippin. "Only a little while ago he slipped away as you drew near."
The elves did not answer at once, but spoke together softly in their own tongue. At length Gildor turned to the hobbits. "We will not speak of this here," he said. "We think you had best come now with us. It is not our custom, but for this time we will take you on our road, and you shall lodge with us tonight, if you will."
"Oh, fair folk, this is good fortune beyond my hope," said Pippin.
Sam was speechless. "I thank you indeed, Gildor and Glorian," said Frodo, bowing. "Elen sila lumen nomenti elvo. A star shines on the hour of our meeting," he added in the high elven speech.
"Be careful, friends," cried Gildor, laughing. "Speak no secrets. Here is a scholar in the ancient tongue. Bilbo was a good master. Hail, elf friend," he said, bowing to Frodo. "Come now with your friends and join our company. You had best walk in the middle so that you may not stray. You may be weary before we halt."
"Why? Where are you going?" asked Frodo.
"For tonight we go to the woods on the hills above Woodhall. It is some miles, but you shall have rest at the end of it, and it will shorten your journey tomorrow." They now marched on again in silence, and passed like shadows and faint lights, for elves, even more than hobbits, could walk when they wished without sound or footfall. Pippin soon began to feel sleepy, and staggered once or twice, but each time a tall elf at his side put out his arm and saved him from a fall. Sam walked along at Frodo's side, as if in a dream, with an expression on his face half of fear and half of astonished joy. The woods on either side became denser. The trees were now younger and thicker, and as the lane went lower, running down into a fold of the hills, there were many deep breaks of hazel on the rising slopes at either hand. At last the elves turned aside from the path. A green ride lay almost unseen through the thickets on the right, and this they followed as it wound away back up the wooded slopes onto the top of a shoulder of the hills that stood out into the lower land of the river valley. Suddenly they came out of the shadows of the trees, and before them lay a wide space of grass, grey under the night. On three sides the woods pressed upon it, but eastward the ground fell steeply, and the tops of the dark trees, growing at the bottom of the slope, were below their feet. Beyond, the lowlands lay dim and flat under the stars. Nearer at hand, a few lights twinkled in the village of Woodhall. The elves sat on the grass and spoke together in soft voices. They seemed to take no further notice of the hobbits. Frodo and his companions wrapped themselves in cloaks and blankets, and drowsiness stole over them. The night grew on, and the lights in the valley went out. Pippin fell asleep, pillowed on a green hillock. Away high in the east swung Remmereth, the netted stars, and slowly above the mists red Borgil rose, glowing like a jewel of fire. Then, by some shift of airs, all the mist was drawn away like a veil, and there leaned up, as he climbed over the rim of the world, the swordsman of the sky, Menelvagor, with his shining belt. The elves all burst into song. Suddenly, under the trees, a fire sprang up with a red light. "Come!" the elves called to the hobbits. "Come! Now is the time for speech and merriment." Pippin sat up and rubbed his eyes. He shivered. "There is a fire in the hall, and food for hungry guests," said an elf standing before him. At the south end of the green sward there was an opening. There the green floor ran on into the wood, and formed a wide space like a hall, roofed by the boughs of trees. Their great trunks ran like pillars down each side. In the middle there was a wood fire blazing, and upon the tree pillars torches with lights of gold and silver were burning steadily. The elves sat round the fire upon the grass, or upon the sawn rings of old trunks. Some went to and fro bearing cups and pouring drink. Others brought food on heaped plates and dishes. "This is poor fare," they said to the hobbits, "for we are lodging in the greenwood far from our halls. If ever you are our guests at home, we will treat you better." "It seems to me good enough for a birthday party," said Frodo. Pippin afterwards recalled little of either food or drink, for his mind was filled with a light upon the elf faces, and the sound of voices so various and so beautiful that he felt in a waking dream. But he remembered that there was bread, surpassing the savour of a fair white loaf to one who is starving, and fruits sweet as wild berries and richer than the tended fruits of gardens. He drained a cup that was filled with a fragrant draught, cool as a clear fountain, golden as a summer afternoon. Sam could never describe in words, nor picture clearly to himself, what he felt or thought that night, though it remained in his memory as one of the chief events of his life. The nearest he ever got was to say, "Well, sir, if I could grow apples like that, I would call myself a gardener, but it was the singing that went to my heart, if you know what I mean." Frodo sat, eating, drinking, and talking with delight. But his mind was chiefly on the words spoken. He knew a little of the elf speech and listened eagerly. Now and again he spoke to those that served him and thanked them in their own language. They smiled at him and said, laughing, "Here is a jewel among hobbits."
After a while, Pippin fell fast asleep, and was lifted up and borne away to a bower under the trees. There he was laid upon a soft bed, and slept the rest of the night away. Sam refused to leave his master. When Pippin had gone, he came and sat curled up at Frodo's feet, when at last he nodded and closed his eyes. Frodo remained long awake, talking with Gildor. They spoke of many things, old and new, and Frodo questioned Gildor about happenings in the wide world outside the Shire. The tidings were mostly sad and ominous, of gathering darkness, the wars of men, and the flight of the elves. At last Frodo asked the question that was nearest to his heart. "Tell me, Gildor, have you ever seen Bilbo since he left us?" Gildor smiled. "Yes," he answered, "twice. He said farewell to us on this very spot, but I saw him once again, far from here." He would say no more about Bilbo, and Frodo fell silent. "You do not ask me or tell me much that concerns yourself, Frodo," said Gildor, "but I already know a little, and I can read more in your face and in the thought behind your questions. You are leaving the Shire, and yet you doubt that you will find what you seek, or accomplish what you intend, or that you will ever return. Is not that so?" "It is," said Frodo, "but I thought my going was a secret known only to Gandalf and my faithful Sam." He looked down at Sam, who was snoring gently. "The secret will not reach the enemy from us," said Gildor. "The enemy?" said Frodo. "Then you know why I'm leaving the Shire?" "I do not know for what reason the enemy is pursuing you," answered Gildor. "But I perceive that he is, strange indeed, though that seems to me. And I warn you that peril is now both before you and behind you, and upon either side."
"You mean the riders? I fear that they were servants of the enemy. What are the Black Riders?"
"Has Gandalf told you nothing?"
"Nothing about such creatures."
"Then I think it is not for me to say more, lest terror should keep you from your journey, for it seems to me that you have set out only just in time, if indeed you are in time. You must now make haste, and neither stay nor turn back, for the Shire is no longer any protection to you."
"I can't imagine what information could be more terrifying than your hints and warnings," exclaimed Frodo. "I knew that danger lay ahead, of course, but I didn't expect to meet it in our own Shire. Can't a hobbit walk from the water to the river in peace?"
"But it is not your own Shire," said Gildor. "Others dwelt here before hobbits were, and others will dwell here again when hobbits are no more. The wide world is all about you. You can fence yourselves in, but you cannot forever fence it out."
"I know. And yet it's always seemed so safe and familiar. What can I do now? My plan was to leave the Shire secretly and make my way to Rivendell, but now my footsteps are dogged before ever I get to Buckland."
"I think you should still follow that plan," said Gildor. "I do not think the road will prove too hard for your courage, but if you desire clearer counsel, you should ask Gandalf. I do not know the reason for your flight, and therefore I do not know by what means your pursuers will assail you. These things Gandalf must know. I suppose that you will see him before you leave the Shire?"
"I hope so. But that's another thing that makes me anxious. I have been expecting Gandalf for many days. He was to have come to Hobbiton at the latest 2 nights ago. But he's never appeared. Now I'm wondering what can have happened. Should I wait for him?"
Gildor was silent for a moment. "I do not like this news," he said at last. "That Gandalf should be late does not bode well. But it is said, do not meddle in the affairs of wizards, for they are subtle and quick to anger. The choice is yours, to go or wait."
"And it is also said," answered Frodo, "go not to the elves for counsel, for they will say both no and yes."
"Is it indeed?" laughed Gildor. "Elves seldom give unguarded advice, for advice is a dangerous gift, even from the wise to the wise, and all courses may run ill. But what would you? You have not told me all concerning yourself, and how then shall I choose better than you? but if you demand advice, I will for friendship's sake give it. I think you should now go at once, without delay, and if Gandalf does not come before you set out, then I also advise this, do not go alone. Take such friends as are trusty and willing. Now you should be grateful, for I do not give this counsel gladly. The elves have their own labors and their own sorrows, and they are little concerned with the ways of hobbits, or of any other creatures upon earth. Our paths cross theirs seldom, by chance or purpose. In this meeting there may be more than chance. But the purpose is not clear to me, and I fear to say too much. I'm deeply grateful, said Frodo, but I wish you'd tell me plainly what the Black Riders are. If I take your advice, I may not see Gandalf for a long time, and I ought to know what's the danger that pursues me. Is it not enough to know that they are servants of the enemy? Answered Gildor. Flee them. Speak no words to them. They are deadly. Ask no more of me. But my heart forebodes that, ere all is ended, you, Frodo, son of Drogo, will know more of these fell things than Gildor and Glorion. May Elbereth protect you. But where shall I find courage? Asked Frodo. That is what I chiefly need. Courage is found in unlikely places, said Gildor. Be of good hope. Sleep now. In the morning we shall have gone, but we will send our messages through the lands. The wandering companies shall know of your journey, and those that have power for good shall be on the watch. I name you Elf Friend, and may the stars shine upon the end of your road. Seldom have we had such delight in strangers, and it is fair to hear words of the ancient speech from the lips of other wanderers in the world. Frodo felt sleep coming upon him, even as Gildor finished speaking. I'll sleep now, he said, and the elf led him to a bower beside Pippin, and he threw himself upon a bed and fell at once into a dreamless slumber. Chapter 4 A Shortcut to Mushrooms. In the morning, Frodo woke refreshed. He was lying in a bower made by a living tree with branches laced and drooping to the ground. His bed was of fern and grass, deep and soft and strangely fragrant. The sun was shining through the fluttering leaves, which were still green upon the tree. He jumped up and went out. Sam was sitting on the grass near the edge of the wood. Pippin was standing studying the sky and weather. There was no sign of the elves.
They have left us fruit and drink and bread, said Pippin. Come and have your breakfast. The bread tastes almost as good as it did last night. I didn't want to leave you any, but Sam insisted.
Frodo sat down beside Sam and began to eat.
What is the plan for today? Asked Pippin.
To walk to Buckleby as quickly as possible, answered Frodo, and gave his attention to the food.
Do you think we shall see anything of those riders? Asked Pippin cheerfully.
Under the morning sun, the prospect of seeing a whole troop of them didn't seem very alarming to him. Yes, probably, said Frodo, not liking the reminder, but I hope to get across the river without their seeing us.
Did you find out anything about them from Gildor?
Not much, only hints and riddles, said Frodo evasively.
Did you ask about the sniffing?
We didn't discuss it, said Frodo with his mouth full.
You should have. I'm sure it's very important.
In that case, I'm sure Gildor would have refused to explain it, said Frodo sharply. And now leave me in peace for a bit. I don't want to answer a string of questions while I'm eating. I want to think.
Good heavens, said Pippin. At breakfast?
He walked away towards the edge of the green. From Frodo's mind, the bright morning, treacherously bright, he thought, had not banished the fear of pursuit, and he pondered the words of Gildor. The merry voice of Pippin came to him. He was running on the green turf and singing.
No, I could not, he said to himself. It is one thing to take my young friends walking over the Shire with me until we are hungry and weary and food and bed are sweet. To take them into exile, where hunger and weariness may have no cure, is quite another, even if they are willing to come.
The inheritance is mine alone.
I don't think I ought even to tell